Hi, this is Healthy Hillary in Greenwich, Connecticut. And today I'm very excited to have on Tiki Barber, the NFL running back who played 10 seasons for the New York Giants. And hi, Tiki, how are you?
I'm fantastic, Hillary. Yourself?
I'm fantastic, too. And I was looking at a quote on your bio that says, if you run the ball, you control the clock. If you control the clock, you usually control the game. So what does that mean?
It's interesting because it's a football analogy, so to speak, if you want to put it into regular life, about the old school way to win football games.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, it's all about throwing the ball and how many yards can you pick up and how many touchdowns can you score and how explosive and just you'd be. But old school and kind of how I grew up playing the game, it was keep the ball away from the opponent
mm-hmm.
by running the ball, controlling the clock, moving the chains consistently and methodically. Eventually you score a touchdown and it gives the opponent less time to go score. But, you know, if you want to look at that metaphorically, it's kind of the way life is.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be lots of ups and downs and some successes, some failures. You hit some home runs, like that big 70-yard run you may have. But a lot of them are going to be 1-, 2-, 5-yard gains that you have to keep plugging along and eventually wait for the the big ones to come. And that's kind of how you have to look at life. Football's been a metaphor for me in so many ways, and I guess that's just one way to put a quote that I said about football into my life.
That's awesome. Well, let's talk about the Giants. How was it for you there? How did you like being a Giant?
Oh, it was fantastic. You know, I grew up in Southwest Virginia,
mm-hmm.
So clearly I was not a Giants fan. I was a Redskins fan for
mm-hmm.
most of my childhood. But as I tell people, once my bills started being paid by the mayors and the Tishes, my loyalties changed, and they've stayed changed. My 10 years were fun. We had some great successes. Went to one Super Bowl. We ultimately lost to the Ravens. And some down years where, you know, it was just painful to go out on the field and going into games realizing that we don't have chances to win. But
mm-hmm.
I always tried to keep my mentality positive and look at myself as a guy who my teammates could count on. So regardless of what's happening around us, whether we're, you know, 3-13 or 10-6, I always wanted to be consistent. I'm going to give my guys the same thing every single time. And as I started to get really good and grow old as a football player, that's what I wanted to rest my laurels on.
Mm-hmm.
I always knew what I was going to leave on the football field, and I had great success doing that over a 10-year period with the New York Giants.
Now, how are you old on the football field? Because you looked really young to me when I saw you.
Yeah, and I was just turned 40.
That's old,
but,
huh?
You know, yeah, it is. You know, in the NFL, the life expectancy of a running back, the position I played,
mm-hmm.
is about 2.5 years. Every now and then, you'll get an outlier, like a guy like Emmitt Smith, who was a contemporary of mine, a peer for the Cowboys, who played for 16 years. But that's rare
mm-hmm.
that you get those guys. On average, guys around 2 or 3 years. If you make it, you know, after 3 years, you usually play about 6 or 7. And so when I retired at 31 years old, I was 10 years into the league for a position that averages about 3.5 years. So I was fortunate. I never had any major injury, lots of dings and a couple broken bones here and there, but nothing that kept me out and seriously harmed my career. And so now when I look at myself, people are like, oh, you look fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, but I couldn't take the hit and nor would I want to take the hits that I had to take when I was still a running back.
Well, and Bob was explaining, I have Bob in the studio with me right now. He was explaining you, basically, your job, everybody is after you on the way to get the ball.
Yeah,
on the,
essentially.
Yeah.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, he's right. I mean, people would ask me, oh, but it's, you know, some plays you're not getting hit. You know, you're only carrying the ball 25 times a game, and there's, you know, 70 plays in a football game. But people forget that as a running back, you have so many different responsibilities. So one, you're carrying the football, and then you're obviously going to get tackled here and there. But then you are pass protector for your quarterback. So a linebacker or defensive end or whoever it may be comes unblocked. You have to block that guy because you need to protect your quarterback. So that's another hit that you're taking. And then if you catch the ball out of the backfield, it's just like running the ball. You're gonna get tackled. So of the 60 something plays or so that I would play on any given Sunday, I'd say on 45 of those plays, I was getting hit in
wow.
some capacity. And it seems like nothing. Oh, you're used to it. But, I mean, I was 200 pounds. Most of these guys were 260, 280 pound men who you get used to hitting and you used to get used to getting up and the pain hurts less, mm-hmm. you know, as you get used to it. But over a course of a 17-week season, it starts to take a toll, especially when you do it for 10 years.
And the broken bones you're describing, did you have them on the field?
I'll tell you the story of one that actually happened the year we went to the Super Bowl. We played in Dallas, and a friend of mine, because he used to be a Giant, was playing cornerback for Dallas now. His name was Felipe Sparks. And in fact, his daughter is Jordan Sparks, who won American Idol.
Oh, wow.
Well, we're playing. I remember he used to tell these stories about his daughter when we'd be in a locker room. He's like, oh, my daughter, she's fantastic. She's going to be a star. She can sing. You should hear. And, you know, you're like, you roll your eyes. Like, you always do. Oh, sure. I'm sure she's great. She's cute. And then here we are, like, 10 years later, she's winning American Idol. Oh, he wasn't lying.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're playing at the end of the year down in Dallas, and he nails me in my forearm. And, you know, didn't it really hurt? Maybe it felt like a deep bruise. They asked me if I wanted to get an x-ray, and I said, you know, I think it's okay. I'll be fine. If it still hurts me, you know, in 2 days from now, when we get back to the stadium after our day off, I'll get it. It felt bad. It was throbbing. Mm-hmm. But I never ended up getting an x-ray. And so we ended up playing our last game of the season. And as I get about a quarter and a half in, and I'm getting pounded a couple times on my arm, I'm like, wow, this thing really, really hurts. So I go into the locker room at the end of the third quarter, and they take an x-ray of my arm, and it turns out I have a compound fracture of my left tibia, or left ulna bone, which is the smaller bone on the outside of your arm, and it's cracked. And the doctor says, you know, you probably cracked this last week, and I played with it cracked. And so
that's amazing.
The beauty, it was painful, and but the crazy thing was, the doctor said, you have to put a plate on this, right? Your season's going to be over. Mm-hmm. But we had just made it into the playoffs, and we had a bye week. And I said, Doc, that's not an option. You got to figure out something else to do. So he reset it. He put a bone stimulator on it, and I played with it for 2 games in the playoffs and then ultimately in the Super Bowl. I played with a broken arm, and people would be like, oh, yeah. Are you stupid? I'm like, well, you know, some days I think I'm brave, but then most days I feel like I'm stupid. But it was worth it. You know, it was my one time to get to a Super Bowl, and I don't regret it at all.
How does it feel to be playing on the day that there is a Super Bowl? I mean, it must be looking around at the crowd and.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Hillary, it is unbelievable. I don't think until I went. I mean, I've been as a spectator a couple of years, when I was young in the NFL, but I hadn't played. But then when I went and I played, the media attention that surrounds that game, and it wasn't just, you know, people from all over the country, whether it be Florida or New York or California or somewhere in the Midwest. It wasn't just media from there. It was media from Japan and Korea and Mexico. And you start to realize the magnitude of that stage and the number of eyes that are on you. You know, it's starting to grow internationally, the game. You hear about the NFL playing games in London now. They look to expand. Mm-hmm. There's an expat community over there. There's starting to be these pop-up leagues in different countries. I think Israel had one. NFL Europe was big for a while, even though that's now defunct. But so the game has grown so much, and the exposure has grown so much. And you think about it when you're standing there in the middle of an arena or a stadium. For mine, it was down in Tampa Bay, and it's just awe-inspiring to think about the impact that you can have if you're ultimately successful in that game. And we saw that, right? We saw it with many guys over the years who have won Super Bowls and Super Bowl MVPs. They just become these iconic figures across the globe.
What do you do after you win? Where do you go?
Well, I didn't win one, so I don't know. But my brother did. And, you know, I was there. He won against the Oakland Raiders in 2002. And they were in San Diego. And I was like, all right, so what do you got? Are you going to a party? What's going? He's like, no. We go back. They had a little tiny celebration at the hotel. Mm-hmm. And then they all went to bed.
And that's it.
It's such an exhausting day that you kind of don't know how to react when it's all over.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you celebrate in the long term. You celebrate when you look back at the accomplishment and realize that your name is in the history books.
That's amazing. So what do you do to train as a Giant? I'm just curious, what's the training like?
Yeah, for me as a player, and it's interesting when you contrast it to how I train now. Mm-hmm. when I was playing, I went to training camp, my last training camp in 2006. I weighed 216 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I was deadlifting a lot and powerlifting and squatting obscene amounts of weight and doing all these things to stress my body physically with practical exercises, you know, so not just laying on a bench and doing a bench press, but picking up a squat rack machine and walking with it. My coach called it a yoke.
Mm-hmm.
Picking up tires and flipping them over, or doing things that built functional strength so that I could load layers and layers of muscle on me, because I knew I was going to take a pounding,
mm-hmm.
For the next, you know, 5 months of my life. And I loved it. I loved that intensity. I loved that gym environment. And it was something that served me well. But when I don't need all that muscle. Naturally, being 5'10",
mm-hmm.
I should weigh about 175 pounds. Instead, I'm now retired, sitting there at, you know, 205 pounds. It I felt bad. You know,
mm-hmm.
I didn't feel fluid. And so through a friend of mine asking me if I wanted to run a marathon for his charity, I ended up losing about 25 pounds running and training. And I know a lot of people loathe running.
I love running.
I absolutely love it. But I loathed it until I actually started doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it only got easier to do when I had something I was training for,
mm-hmm.
right? Which went back to why I was training the way I was when I was playing. I was training for a purpose. So once I started running races as opposed to just running to be in shape, it became much more interesting and compelling. And now I find it as an escape. I had a long run last weekend of 11 miles, and it's like I'm on the road for almost 2 hours, but I feel like it's my sanctuary, you know, a time for me to escape from everything that's going on and just be with myself,
mm-hmm.
and obviously keep in great shape. So my philosophy on training has changed,
mm-hmm.
but I think that the impetus behind it has stayed the same. Find the purpose, and it's made it really easy for me.
So what's the charity that you're running for?
I run for CC and Amber Sabathia's charity called the Pitch In Foundation. It's an organization that helps inner city or underprivileged kids with things like school supplies,
mm-hmm.
or dresses for prom or other types of encouragement. The Boys and Girls Club has been something that they've donated a lot of their time, money, and resources to. But I also build baseball fields in underprivileged communities back out in California,
mm-hmm.
And also here in New Jersey where they currently live. So it's been a good cause for a guy that I've gotten close with over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. And, you know, it gives me a reason to stay in shape and raise money to run.
When do they do it?
They have tons of events. They have an event, mm-hmm. coming up in September. I want to say it's the 5th.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's this coming up weekend, September 5th, where they're distributing backpacks full of supplies and different, you know, tchotchkes for kids as they go back to school.
Mm-hmm.
The field dedication, they usually happen over the summer. They had one last summer out in California and Vallejo, and so it's worthwhile. And I think they get a great boost from they put a great boost into the communities that they're encouraging to succeed and rise above. And we, as athletes and people who contribute, obviously feel like we're doing a good job for our communities as well.
So how long is the run for? Is it a half marathon that you're doing?
Well, no. For CC and Amber, it's the full marathon. So
oh,
it's
wow.
The whole 26.2. But this year, I've been running the New York City Five Borough Series with the New York Roadrunners,
mm-hmm.
and their team for kids, which consists of the New York half, the Brooklyn half, the Queens 10K, the Bronx 10-miler, which is coming up at the end of September, the Staten Island, and then finally the Staten Island half marathon. So I've already done three of those, and I'm excited about it. It's been fun. You know, I keep improving
mm-hmm.
my times. I keep learning more about myself as a runner, which is something I've never, you know, thought about, thought I would be doing, being really a sprinter when I was in college and then a football player. I was built for short distance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't built for these long endurance type races. I've grown to love them and embrace them.
I think the Bronx 10 miler sounds like a fun thing to do. And then you go
yeah.
and have a little, where do you go after? Somewhere Italian,
you know,
for dinner?
I lived up in the Bronx for a while,
mm-hmm.
In Riverdale, because my kids were in school at Riverdale for a couple of years before they moved up to Greenwich with their mom, my ex-wife. And, there's a couple of diners. One is the Riverdale City grill, which is not really Italian, but the food is great because it's all fresh and salad. There's lots of salads there. But I'll certainly find an Italian spot because you got a carbo load after you destroy yourself and knock down all the calories from running and everything else.
So talk to me about, do you go to the Giants games? Are you at all the events every year?
Not a ton of the Giants games. I go to about four a year. You know, one or two I'll go with my kids. My kids are so busy now playing football themselves that often they can't find time to get over. But last year I went with a couple of the sponsors, one with Pepsi, another with one of the television sponsors that they have at the stadium. One, I went as a guest of the Giants themselves because they were honoring some of their record holders, and I held a few of the records with the New York Giants still. And so I get over there, and I enjoy it. The stadium is different, though. I played my 10 years in the old Giants stadium, and now it's MetLife Stadium, which is more corporate. It's more, business-friendly because there's so many event spaces in there, and it's not as intimate as the old Giants stadium was. But it is spectacular. When you're there sitting in a box, you realize the luxury that some of these people they go watch football games at, and it's pretty cool.
So you were also telling me, I remember when we ran into each other, about the Fresh Air Fund. I thought that was a very interesting charity you're involved in.
Yeah, the Fresh Air Fund is a great organization. They've been around for over 100 years, and their mission is so simple, and it's why I'm on their board and why a lot of the things I do philanthropically surround them. They basically provide summer vacations for kids in inner cities of New York, kids who are used to being in the concrete jungle 24/7, get a chance to sleep out in the stars at one of the camps in upstate New York, or learn how to swim, or go fishing, or things of that nature. And there's a program involved with the Fresh Air Fund called Friendly Town, which is a family, a host family, so like your family, would take a kid for the summer, 2 weeks or however long, and basically keep him as part of your family for whatever you guys do over the summer. So if you're going to go to the beach, you take the kid to the beach. If you're going to go hiking, you take the kid hiking. If you're going to go to Disney World, you take the kid to Disney World. And Friendly Town has been one of the most unique and fulfilling programs for not only the families that bring in the kid, but obviously the kid himself who gets to live this life and sometimes become integrated in this family for years into the future, and maybe forever into their future. So it's a great organization that I love being involved with. We have a big benefit every year with celebrities and a big party. So it's fun.
Where do they do the Fresh Air Fund charity?
Our big event is it used to be at Tavern on the Green before Tavern on the Green closed, and that was obviously a fantastic venue. Now they do it over at Chelsea Piers, Pier 60, I believe it is, one of the piers at Chelsea Piers, and it's a big gala. Last year we had Odell Beckham Jr., who was a standout wide receiver for the New York Giants. He was there, and a few other celebrities. Zach Posen was one of our honorees in the fashion world. So it's always exciting and interesting who they get to come, but then it's just a great night and a great event because we know that we're raising money for a simple but worthwhile cause.
Those kids must have such a great time with families doing different things for the summer.
They get exposed. They get exposed to something new that they maybe haven't seen before, and you never know when that exposure creates a dream or sparks an interest in something new. And then life is your oyster after that. You grow. I have always believed that natural curiosity is one of the greatest things in the world to have and to possess, and sometimes it needs to be fostered into you. I think the Fresh Air Fund helps do that for a lot of kids that otherwise may fall by the wayside.
So what's your plans for the next 10 years? You have any goals?
Oh, God. I have a lot going on. I have five kids. Four with my ex-wife, two boys who are 13 and 11, and then twins who are just turned 5 years old. And then I have a 20-month-old with my second wife. And so raising kids is certainly part of that. I have a radio show on CBS Sports Radio, which is a national show for us. And that's always fun because I love sports and I love talking about it and having conversations about it. And that platform gives me a vehicle to do that. And then I guess the entrepreneurial side of my life came into focus about 4 years ago when I started a company called Thuzio.com, which is essentially a marketplace for athletes to engage with corporate America and book things like corporate engagements or speeches or provide intel to corporate America on how to book a talent. A lot of people would make us, would view us akin to a Bloomberg, a terminal, right? If you're going to buy a stock and you want information on where that stock has been, you know, the highs, the lows, the corporate structure look like, you find that on Bloomberg. What Thuzio.com does is provide intel on athletes and other entertainers of influence. So a chef or a musician or an athlete or whoever it may be, you can find out where they're from, where they currently live, what their interests are, obviously their pertinent stats, and any social metrics that may be relevant to a brand campaign or marketer. And so we've created this missing piece of the marketplace for booking celebrities and influencers, and it's been a great business, and we're continuing to grow and expand. So I have a busy plate, but it's all things that are passionate to me, and things that really fit with my interest in life.
So if there's people in Greenwich listening now that want to host a, you know, a benefit, and they're interested in hiring a talent, they can go to this website.
Yeah, you can go there and look for someone who fits authentically or organically with what you're trying to do. We work a lot with charities and not-for-profits, as well as corporate America, who does who do events all the time. Sometimes they don't think about themselves as event producers, but most corporate corporations are event producers, even if it's entertaining clients or creating a local messaging system to get out whatever it is they're trying to sell. Influencers are a great way to accent that, and we provide the platform, you know, that is the marketplace to get that done.
So what is the website again so that we can tell our listeners?
Very easy. It's Thuzio, Thuzio.com. And we got the name because we realized that everyone, you know, regardless of what your passions are an enthusiast of something. So Thuzio is a truncation of enthusiast.
And any of these speakers, talent, are they willing to come out and do, you know, it's a charity event for a local company that just wants a good speaker for an event, things like that?
Possibly. You know, it's all up to our talent. You know, we're not the agent for the talent. A lot of people confuse us as an agent or an agency. We're not that. We are more the aggregator of talent and identifying what they're good at and what they're connected to. And what they're passionate about, so that we can make a connection and, if need be, facilitate that interaction with a corporate client or individual client out there. And that's including a not-for-profit.
So now, wrapping it up, I wanted to say, if you want to get in shape, just say you're just starting, maybe you have somebody listening today that's just going back to the gym, what's the best thing you can encourage somebody with, you know, to train a giant? Right?
Yeah. The most important thing you can do is, even if you don't do a ton, make it a habit, right? Make sure you find time to go every day. Even if you say you're going to go start running, if I want to start running, but I know I can't go just run 5 miles. You don't go run 5 miles, go run a mile, but do it 5 days in a row. Right? And so you start creating a habit, something that your body and your schedule tells yourself it's going to do every single day. And eventually, as we were talking about earlier, find something that motivates you to do more. Sign up for a 5K, or sign up for a 10K, or as you get more advanced, eventually sign up for a half marathon. And in your mind, you'll tell yourself, all right, I want to be ready. And that forces you to start working out a little bit harder. It's no different than the summer coming, you know, when people start saying, oh, I got to get in my bathing suit shape. It's the same type of thing. Set a goal for yourself, an endpoint, and then train to that. That's how I've always found getting in shape best benefits me.
Well, I'm so happy that you were able to come on the Healthy Hillary Show, and you've inspired all our listeners. And we've had Tiki Barber on the air this morning, and you've been listening to Healthy Hillary on 1490 WGCH.